Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Joining us on the line to give us his thoughts is Professor Shabir Ahmadi. He is a vaccinologist and has been fairly outspoken in this regard. Professor, good morning. Thanks for taking the time to speak to us. I know how busy you are at the moment. It's greatly appreciated.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me.
So it's a real concern because here we are in the middle of this third wave. We're hearing excuses about, I don't know, vaccine apartheid and rich countries stealing all the vaccines. But in the meantime, we could have done a heck of a lot better than we have done, no matter what the circumstances.
Certainly so. Our biggest fault was that we really started to engage in bilateral with the producers of these vaccines only earnestly in the beginning of this year, rather than what many other middle-income countries did, which is in addition to signing up for the COVAX facility, they also started to engage in bilaterals around about August, September. So we could very much be at the front of the queue when those vaccines did eventually become available. So that was the first big mistake that we made. So yes, vaccine nationalism, vaccine apartheid are important issues. We certainly limit the supply of vaccine, but particularly that is for low and middle income, the low and middle income countries, unlike an upper middle income country such as South Africa, which was always expected to be somewhat self-sufficient over and above its contribution to the COVAX facility. And then, unfortunately, there were a series of other miscalculations. Had we started using the AstraZeneca vaccine in January as an example, we would not have prevented the resurgence that's currently taking place, because that vaccine is not going to protect against mild infection. But what the vaccine was going to do, in all likelihood, is protect against severe disease and death. So, unfortunately, we will lose a few hundred lives because of the South African government and advisors to the South African government deciding not to actually use the AstraZeneca vaccine, despite the World Health Organization making it clear that even in those countries, such as South Africa, where the beta variant was circulating, those countries should continue using the AstraZeneca vaccine. But South Africa decided rather to sell off life-saving vaccines to other African countries, and to do that pretty much right.
Was there anything sinister, or was it just a bad decision?
Unfortunately, just a bad decision from what I can gather. People didn't really interpret the data from South Africa correctly. They extrapolated that if a vaccine doesn't protect against mild disease, it won't protect against severe disease. I've been working on vaccines for respiratory pathogens for 25 years, and invariably, all of these vaccines protect much better against severe disease than against mild infection of the upper airway. So these vaccines are life-saving vaccines because it protects severe disease, protect against severe disease, it protects against pneumonia. They're not life-saving vaccines because they protect against sniffles. So the AstraZeneca vaccine, as an example, and many of the other vaccines, including the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, will not protect against mild infection. But yes, they do a fantastic job when it comes to reducing the risk of individuals, especially high-risk individuals, from ending up in hospital and from dying.
I would submit as well that had we taken those vaccines, it would have allowed us to get into the rhythm of vaccinating people, ironed out a lot of the issues, allowed us to open up the facilities so that we could start to get this motion going as a first point. And the second point is that it also, unfortunately, by rejecting those vaccinations, or by rejecting those vaccines, has created vaccine hesitancy, which is something that we still haven't yet had to deal with because we don't have enough vaccines. But I believe we are going to be dealing with.
Absolutely, on both accounts. We certainly could have sorted out many of the challenges we're currently experiencing when it comes to the logistics of vaccine deployment. As an example, South Africa has already received 2.4 million doses of the Pfizer vaccine, but we've only administered about 1.67 million doses of the Pfizer vaccine. So we need to ask, where are the roughly 700,000 other Pfizer doses of vaccine, and why is it not actually in the system when a province such as the Western Cape is indicating that they don't have enough vaccine to be able to scale up the number of people that they vaccinate? So those logistics would certainly have been dealt with had we started using the AstraZeneca vaccine. We shouldn't have been the reason to use the AstraZeneca vaccine. The main reason to have used it was to provide people a fighting chance of being protected against a resurgence, which was completely predictable.
And from what I'm seeing in terms of the data and the information, just to add one jab of Pfizer after the AstraZeneca gives people phenomenal protection.
In fact, it seems that what you refer to the T-cell responses, those T-cell responses are actually superior in individuals that receive the AstraZeneca vaccine as the first dose followed by the Pfizer vaccine as a second dose. And it is those T-cell responses that are especially important when it comes to protecting individuals against severe disease. So that combination would have been fantastic. And in fact, if anything, right now, South Africa, as an example, should be thinking of using the Johnson & Johnson vaccine followed by the Pfizer vaccine in the same individual if we are wanting these vaccines to protect against mild disease. These vaccines are not going to protect, including the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, is not going to protect against mild disease. These vaccines, like I said, do fantastic when it comes to protecting against severe disease. But the Pfizer vaccine itself, two doses, does well in protecting against mild infection, but not so, unfortunately, for the AstraZeneca vaccine, probably not so for the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. And those vaccines are going to need more if you're wanting to use those vaccines to also protect against the mild COVID, the upper airway infections that people, that most people would experience if they are infected with the virus.
Let's just move to talk about the hospitals. I know that the doctors that I've been speaking to over the last couple of weeks, and certainly over the weekend, are struggling with beds. In fact, one of the doctors yesterday that I spoke to sent me a picture of ambulances lined up outside the hospital because there was nowhere to put the patients, and he was going to examine them in the ambulances. That's how bad it was yesterday. No beds, no ventilators, but yet we're being told that everything is under control, and we're also hearing about empty facilities. We don't have the Charlotte Makeke open. Nasrec doesn't seem to be opening, and there's another hospital, I think, that you referred to in one of your interviews as well, that is just standing. What is going on?
So unfortunately, it's an issue of poor planning. In fact, we don't need Nasrec facilities, and we certainly don't need patients needing to be examined in an ambulance, or patients sitting in an emergency department for 2 to 3 days on oxygen before they get into the ward. Because right now there's more than 1,000 beds which were specifically developed to manage COVID-19 patients. It has got state-of-the-art equipment with each bed that's available in at least 4 different facilities across the Greater Johannesburg Sony area. Those beds are not being utilized because it seems that we haven't adequately planned to ensure that we've got staff available to actually man those facilities, which is really tragic. Right now, as an example, as you mentioned, the Charlotte Makeke Hospital is shut. Those staff need to be immediately redeployed to those facilities that are actually available. The beds are available. It's not the problem with having beds available. The equipment is available. The oxygen is available. The healthcare workers haven't actually been sent to those facilities to ensure that we can utilize those facilities for the purpose for which it was built.
You know, we often told, or we've been told over and over again, that things are being handled and South Africans are reassured and everybody will get their vaccine and everybody will be treated. Is there any acknowledgement from government that things aren't what they say they are?
Well, I think you're a journalist, so you can debate as to what level of acknowledgement there is from government. Yes, South Africa probably will eventually vaccinate 40 million people, probably by the end of 2022 or 2023. That is not going to be very helpful when it comes to protecting lives, because all indications are right now that, fortunately for South Africans, and somewhat unfortunately, is a past infection that has taken place would actually assist in protecting against severe disease. So what we have ending up happening is eventually vaccinating a population by the time when the majority of the population probably would already have been protected, at least against severe disease, because of them unfortunately having been exposed to the virus and having been naturally infected.
Crazy, crazy situation. And that is Professor Shabir Mahdi, vaccinologist. Thank you for taking the time to speak to us. And more importantly, thanks for speaking up.